The waiting room was my life, as opposed to Cleveland. It is a pensive Donna who waits in her apartment on her sofa, which does seem fine to sit on after all. The weight of the decision seems to push her down to the bottom of the frame. Barreto trusts the acting enough to hold the tableau for nearly 7 seconds, although he does liven it up by tracking the camera towards her. Ted enters, completely changing the energy of the scene. He's top of his law class. We can see that Donna is genuinely thrilled for him. She always felt that should he re-enter academia, he would thrive, and this news is vindication for them both. She rises to her feet, but does she want to rise still further? In a masterstroke of mise-en-scene, Barreto places Ted in the doorway. On his right, screen left, Donna's poster of the Arc de Triomphe. On his left, screen right, another revelatory piece of art direction, a clock whose face looks like the front of a plane. Two propeller-bearing wings jut from the circular front, two wheels angle out below. The staging renders Ted as the unwitting barrier between Donna in flight, as represented by the novelty clock, and her destination, Paris, First Class International, as represented by the Arc de Triomphe. He's also kind of blocking the door, which is annoying. Donna tells Ted that she needs to go to Dallas today to retest. Although we, the remaining audience, know all of this information from the previous scene, it's thrilling to rehear it in Ted's company, particularly as portrayed by Ruffalo. His jaw drops at Donna's recounting of Christine's duplicitous behaviour. He is thrilled to hear about the retesting, and with immediate, sensitive responsiveness, suggests that they postpone any celebration of his own work-related progress until after Donna's return. Each new beat is handled with precision and nuance. It's a masterful performance, so light and deft that no awards committee would ever be brave enough to recognise it. Then Donna delivers the killer blow. Depending on how the test goes, she may not be able to return. She could be placed elsewhere, and gives New York as an example of one such placement. Ted expresses disbelief that Donna would make such an important decision alone, with no consultation. As Chandler from the sitcom Friends might have said, "Could you be more autocratic?" Donna replies by reminding Ted how they had always said that Cleveland was just a big waiting room. But that isn't Ted's point, and what's more, it was Donna's aphorism. Impassioned and underscored by a delicate piano melody reprising time after time, Ted essays clarification. "For me, the waiting room was my life until I met you. I'm in love with you." However, Ted's transposition of Donna's metaphor doesn't quite land. Cleveland is an actual physical place, and so the analogy of it being a waiting room is easier to process, and certainly more evocative than the somewhat strained assertion that his life was a waiting room. Life isn't a physical space. Ted knows that more than anyone. What is his life now? A doing room? Now that I'm with you, my life is a doing room? Doesn't sound too romantic now, does it, Ted? But Donna is unable to change her destination. "I can't let somebody tell me that I've seen enough," she says, after looking away and trying to make herself cry. Donna's response is maddening. In what way has Ted even suggested that she's seen enough? What does that even mean? Is he recommending that she detach her retina, that she's had a surfeit of ocular input? Of course not. He, in a relatively benign way, was seeking to evaluate their communication process, suggesting that she was being unilateral, and how right he was. Donna is making Ted the problem, putting words into his mouth and blatantly mischaracterizing him. This is the very definition of gaslighting. It is only because we have seen how hard Donna has worked to get to this point in her career that we are able to brook this savage rupture. It's a harrowing moment, so raw, so naked that it makes you want to reach into your ribcage and rip out your heart to check it's still there. With that, Ted says, "Okay," and walks to a different part of the room, like a wounded stag. The camera dollies into Donna, tears welling up either from emotion or allergies. It's unclear. So sudden is the redness in her eyes. Ted Ted gone, we join Donna at the wheel of her car, recalling Top's many head-on driving shots of our stewardess, sans pareil. But this time, she is neither excited nor celebratory. Paltrow conveys much of this physically through her resigned body language, the voiceover merely adding another level of explication. I hated leaving Ted. Ted made me feel like I'd found home. The problem was, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to be home. But does Donna want to leave home for good, or just pop out for some air? Also, is the home located in her or in Ted? To recap Donna's proposition, one, being with Ted equals feeling of being home, two, home equals place of discomfort, three, therefore Ted equals uncomfortable feeling? We simply don't know. Ted, dispatched. Donna aces her exam and receives a hero send-off from John Whitney, who reveals that the last person to get a score of 100% was a certain John Whitney 7 years ago. It's Donna's time to claim what's rightfully hers. Just a note on John Whitney's exam results. If he was as cross-eyed then as he looks now, why would Royalty Airlines allow him on the training program in the first place? It seems absurd that they would let him complete the course and then tell him he's ineligible. What a waste of resources. A company that behaved like that would lose its shirt. A series of elegant, chaste, Berettian close-ups show Donna putting on her new uniform. Its classic fit and look hark back to the golden age of aviation that she and Sally Weston love so much. One thing's for certain, Donna is no longer Royalty Express. This is the kind of montage you only get when you're Paris, First Class International. She ascends escalators, deals with a higher class of traveller, and distributes delicious-looking in-flight meals. Not even a hair-pulling, stiletto-stamping, rolling-on-the-floor set-piece fight with a vengeful Christine can mar her achievement. But as the disgraced ex-stewardess is deplaned by two extras pretending to be security guards, we wonder, at what cost, Donna's ascent?